It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Richie, Andy, and Akko are here. A surprise visit from Alex Lindsay. The iPhone 5S rumors are getting hot and heavy. What can we expect come this August? We'll also find out if Apple Maps is getting any better. Some say yes. Stay tuned. We'll find out.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 341, recorded March 12th, 2013. Drop it like it's hot. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm. It provides self-help services at your direction, such as affordable business and professional documents you could trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK3. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continual, unlimited backup for your computer files. Only $59 a year. Try it free at carbonite.com and use the offer code MACBREAK to get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the latest news from the Apple Kingdom, the Kingdom of Apple. And joining us, some of its princes, Mr. Andy Inako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Almost thrown out for his shameful shift to Android. We're waiting to hear.
Well, again, I've been accused of cafeteria Apple fandom. I just simply pick and choose the elements of Apple dogma that I choose to follow and reject those that I find incongruous with modern living. But
you're in the slippery slope, my friend, to secularism.
I have indeed nailed my letter to the wall.
He's a reformed Apple. He's a reformed Apple user. Martin Luther and Notco. We also welcome Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com, the rumor man. We got some rumors. We're going to talk about the 5S. Hey, Rene.
Hey, Leo. I'm split between two introductory jokes. I could say that in following Andy, I'm switching from Starbucks to Second Cup.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I have a BlackBerry.
There is only
one
true cup of a king.
It's an X10. A white X10.
Yeah.
You're Canadian. That's allowed.
Well, yeah, they released them in Canada first, of course.
I've got people in the studio audience. We've got people from Waterloo, home of research and most, pardon me, BlackBerry. They call it BlackBerry now. So I want to talk about that in a little bit. That's good. Because I'm torn. I'm thinking about it. I'm considering making the move. And welcome also to Alex Lindsay, who's joining us from Austin, Texas, where he's just arrived for South by Southwest.
Yeah, everyone was gone. I was like, what happened? There's just a lot of people wandering around that are
over.
I'm actually not here for South by Southwest. I'm here at U-Studio, which we're having some meetings here. And then they do a lot of content management software. And then we're doing some streams down here that are kind of connected to South by Southwest, but not at it. So,
well, it really isn't over. The interactive is winding up, but the music begins this week. So that's going to be really cool, actually.
And unfortunately, I probably won't see any of it anyway.
Or is it the film?
I'll be working.
Was it music? I can't remember the order. Music, interactive, film. I think maybe it's film, though.
Well, no. I think that the film and music is starting this week. So I think that all the interactive, which is what we pay attention to, of course, is over. But the real festival that has been here for a long time is really just starting.
It's an interesting tweet on Sunday because I had to find people who weren't at South By.
Right.
And so all we did is sit around and be bitter. It was a great twit because we had Liz Gaines and Dwight Silverman, who's never been to South By, even though he lives in Texas, and of course Julie O'Dell. And Liz Gaines from All Things D said she had been asked to go to South By and said no.
Wow. I always think that every year, I think this is going to be the year I don't go to South By, and every year here I am at some point in time around.
It's worth going because it's a great party.
It's really great.
But it's not a news. Well, there was a little bit of news, but it's not a huge news event.
No, but it is a lot of fun, and there is an incredible amount of networking, an incredible amount of people here to see, and Austin is beautiful. So
oh, I love Austin.
They did Google, was there with Google Glass, and they did announce that a number of the big apps like Path will be available on Google Glass. The New York Times, which seems a little odd to me. I'm not sure I want my New York Times over my upper right-hand corner of my eye. But maybe it has to do more with, I don't know what, maybe it's not the, well, the paper. I don't know.
The guy sitting in front of me on the flight down last night had Glass on, and there was a lot of, you know, moving around and looking at stuff, and, yeah, and I have to admit I was very jealous.
It's one advantage of Glass over an iWatch is it's got a bigger display. It's not a bigger display. It's actually smaller, but it appears to be bigger because it's so close to
your eye. I think it's going to be really, I think it's going to be a pretty big deal. So I'm excited.
To what degree was that man actually using Glass towards some productive purpose, and to what degree he just wanted to see Glass?
Anytime you're the only one with something, there's no productiveness. No. They're just showing everybody. Right. You know, like, so literally you're just like, and then I can do this, and I can do this, and then I can do this, and then the next person in line, so okay, tell me about Glass. And then it just keeps on going, you know, one after the other. So that's more what happens.
Until the day that Google Glass becomes widespreadly available, there's going to be some sort of a new super virus form of pink eye that's communicated just by people giving each other demonstrations of Glass. I'm confident about this.
Quite a pretty picture.
So let's talk about the new iPhone, the 5S, because Renee is a font of information about the 5S. Which last go-round really was on top of all the rumors, has once again taken the lead with lots of rumors. What's the latest? You call it the iPhone 5S problem.
That was just... So last week I published some information about an iPhone 5S that we were hearing it was coming out in August. And because there's so much Apple is doomed coverage these days, anything Apple announces, the stock goes down. Or there's a weird story that appears. Just a lot of things that are very curious. I was trying to explore some of the sentiments, and I did another piece about journalism, and now I was trying to think about it as a consumer. And if every year Apple releases one iPhone a year, and if every second year it's an S-class phone, the iPhone 3GS, the iPhone 4S, you start to assume maybe this year it'll be a 5S.
Right.
And then you start to look at when you buy becomes a factor of when you think Apple's going to release, because it's always around the same time of year.
Right.
And if you have two-year contracts, do you really want the S phone? Is the S phone a symbol that they've got something better, or they fixed something in the previous one? Or is it just a non-exciting update to what you already bought?
So let's look at previous S phones. The S, yes. The first S was the 3GS, and I guess S stood for speed.
Yes.
The second S was the 4S, and in that case, Siri. So those were both big additions. While the phone didn't look any different, they were significant improvements in performance.
They were absolutely, and the added features and functionality. You know, and some people say that Apple does this deliberately. They deliberately handicap older phones. But the 3GS had video, and only the 3GS had video recording. And the 4S had Siri, and only the 4S had Siri. So they were software differentiation on top of the camera boost, the processor boost, and usually the radio boost that went along with it.
Right.
But now we have two things that come with that. Not only do people wait to buy until they think the next iPhone is coming out when it gets to a certain point in year, but competitors start to understand that. And I think the HTC Nexus One was one of the first ones that did this. But we have the HTC One now in the spring. We have the Galaxy S4 coming in the spring. We have the BlackBerry Z10 coming in the spring. And this is when the iPhone is 6 months old. The next update is presumably 6 months away. And if people are generally interested in technology and they see these exciting things happening at a period where there's very little Apple news or very little information or sign that a new iPhone is coming, I think those things start to affect the market.
It could be a defensive rumor. It could be Apple leaking it, saying, hey, don't worry, we got something coming.
Which brings you right to the iWatch again, where, you know, you want to have something that increases overall platform value, and you start hearing all these rumors. And some people think that. Some people think that Apple, you know, leaked that the iPad was going to be $1,000 so that when it was $500, it seemed like a bargain. So that can absolutely happen. I just think that when you start looking at Apple's behavior last year, and they called it the new iPad instead of the iPad 3, and Phil Schiller said because they didn't want to be predictable, and then they released a new iPad. Again, two iPads in a year, three if you count the iPad mini, that's not a usual thing for Apple. And we heard that this year there might be the iPad 4 as soon as April.
Yeah.
And that would be Apple starting to play again with their release schedule. And that becomes less predictable, more interesting. And if they split the iPhone line the way they split the iPad line, then presumably you don't have that big product dump in the fall anymore, but you have a more spread out schedule across the year.
But it's so hard to really feel as though you know what Apple's thinking. One thing that complicates, for instance, the iPad revision 3 announcement was that, remember, that came right on the heels of them putting out those lightning connectors. And Apple, given how quickly they move product through the retail channel, it's possible that they simply said, we'd like to stop making these 30-pin connectors and assemblies as quickly as possible. Why not we just roll out an update? The current buyers are going to be pleased by getting a slightly improved product, and we'll have one less problem on our hands.
LTE internationally too, which was a big deal.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I mean, the more you think about how Apple releases its products, the more you realize that they really are a universe in and of themselves, and it's hard to apply conventional logic to how they release things. The iPhone 5, for all of its strengths, when you think about it, adding LTE is just – it's almost as if they finally finished developing the first revision of iPhone. This is probably the first model of iPhone where you can't say, well, here's the list of features that you would expect to find on every phone as of 2011. And now finally every iPhone has every item on that feature list. So the kind of it tickles your imagination as to what they can do now to make a very, very resolute enhancement to the iPhone at this point. I hope it's making a camera that's even better than what they have right now, but I don't even want to try to imagine what they've got in mind as that really big rollout, dun-dun-dun, and now here's something that the iPhone 6 does or the iPhone 5S does that was never imagined before, but we made it happen for you because we love you, the consumer.
That nail was part of works. That's what I'd like to see. Like, just the Mail app. Like, if Apple just fixed the Mail app, I think I would consider that.
What's wrong with Mail? What doesn't it do?
Okay, so if you don't get a lot of mail, I guess it's not that big of a deal. But I get like 400 emails a day, you know. And the problem is that it just – I have mail that doesn't show up in Mail. So I have to – you know, I've moved to Gmail. I mean, I'm using the Gmail app, and the Gmail app works perfectly. But the Mail app is just – in you know, and I don't – it's easier to use the Apple products, you know, the Apple software on an Apple product. So I would use it if I could, but literally there's just a whole pile of emails and I go to my computer and suddenly there's a bunch of emails that I didn't see on my iPhone or my iPad. Yep. That are there. And I'm not sure exactly why that is the case. And, you know, I'm quite happy giving Mail 5 gigabytes of my storage just to keep them there. Like I don't want it to go up to the web every 20 seconds to find them, because for me the last 200 emails was like the last 12 hours. You know, it doesn't do me any good to. So I think that high volume usage of Mail on the iPhone is not something that it's particularly built for.
And you've tried Gmail and Mailbox.
The Gmail works. The Gmail app is probably the best app for if you're getting a lot of mail. The Gmail app is the way to go. And so, you know, I've been slowly, you know, weaning my way away from mail and just using Gmail for that. And since our account is a Gmail account.
It's no good to you if it's not.
My frustration is that I need to pick up an email that arrived like maybe yesterday or the day before. I know who sent it. I know what the subject line is. I think I'm searching for exactly the sort of thing that will return that hit of that important email that says, here's the location of the meeting that got changed 2 days ago. Yeah. But the iPhone app will not find it. It's very, very belittling when I find I have to launch Safari, open the webmail client for my inbox, because their simple web-based type anything into the search box, anything that matches will find it. And boom, hey, what do you know? I did a search on room change and there it was.
Yeah, I don't understand Apple how search can be so complicated. I mean, you know, for something, a simple string across the emails that I have, I don't know how it cannot get that right.
The Apple Mail and Gmail have historically not worked well together, and part of that is because Apple is trying to look for a standard IMAP implementation, and Gmail is anything but. And I know you can set it up over Exchange and things, but Apple asks for a lot of simultaneous connections, and Gmail has a very low simultaneous connection limit, so it errors out a lot. Gmail has a very low bandwidth limit, you know, for a company the size of Google, and Apple demands those emails a lot. So if you use Mail, any Apple Mail client and Gmail together, it's not great, and sometimes Mail comes in and it goes to all mail instead of inbox. And because there's no folder mapping the way IMAP expects, you just don't see it in your inbox. There's a whole bunch of issues as to why those two things don't play very nicely together.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's good. Those are good notes.
Have you guys tried a mailbox at all?
Mm-mm. I didn't want to stand in line.
Yeah, it's a long line. I'm in, but Mailbox is the app that people have been talking about like crazy because it's supposed to be kind of a merging of mail and GTD. I don't know if this would help you, though, Alex, because it's basically a single inbox, and then you slide, and depending on how you slide, you can either, this is archive, this is delete. If I slide it to the left, if I slide it to the left, I can set a ticker that says, remind me about this later to handle.
I love that.
I mean, it might be. I mean,
And then if you go all the way to the left, you can put it in a list and you can make all of these your arbitrary lists. So it's really more about processing the mail quickly than it is about, I don't think it necessarily solves your issue of just.
I have to admit, our obsession right now is getting just not using mail. In general, email.
I don't think anybody uses mail. Did you see Nick Bilton's article in the Times?
No, I'm saying
his whiny article about don't send me emails. Text. Use text. Everybody uses text these days.
Well, the hard part with text, of course, is finding it later. And so, really, the focus that we have within, you know, as our company grows, is really trying to get to a point where people are using, you know, docs that we're all updating. You know, systems like, you know, we're now implementing right now Salesforce.com across the entire thing, so that, you know, all the information about a specific client is being added from about six different directions, and we're not sending emails about it. We're just having, you know, updating documents, and then of course a lot of GDocs and everything else. But the main thing is trying to get away from the idea that the information that you actually need is sitting inside of email.
You need Podio. Have you tried Podio?
I have not tried Podio.
They didn't buy an ad on this show, so I'm not, this is an advertiser. It's a Citrix product, but it's an attempt, and I think that there are probably many of these, to take these disparate pieces of information in a lot of different places, like Google Docs and email, and combine them in a way so that you can work with them together with a team. And that, I mean, this is the problem. It's a workflow problem, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, right now we have on any given project, I've got 8 to 10 people touching that project. And so, you know, and right now a lot of it has been, you know, there is a lot of Google Docs that keep track of it. I mean, so like to manage, like for instance, for us to manage, you know, we have all these people, like for an event we had recently, we had probably 30 people working on it. And they all had to have different information. So everybody has their own GDoc.
Yeah.
That, because that way we're able to manage, like there's a skeleton doc that says, here's
all
how
we do it. Yeah.
Everyone can see.
Yeah.
And then there's links to all of the documents. And when you click on it, then it decides whether you're allowed to see it or not. But there's this whole process, and you're just and you still devolve into sometimes sending emails of when we're going to have meetings and so on and so forth. And we're trying to, by the end of this year, kind of, you know, get rid of that.
You will be the one among the first companies to solve this, and I can't wait to see what you do, because it is a nightmare.
There are companies that do it. I mean, you know, I think that, you know,
Salesforce, do they have a solution to do?
Well, Salesforce, that's what they do, is they build tools to let you do that.
Right.
So, I mean, we do a lot of work for Salesforce. So it's embarrassing that it's taken us this long to get it fully implemented. I mean, we use Salesforce in limited ways for CRM and so on and so forth, but to actually implement it in a way to manage, you know, really manage the projects at an enterprise level is something that we just weren't big enough to need. And now I guess we are. I mean, it's, you know, it's just turning it, you know, just dealing with lots and lots of data and lots of pieces is a process.
Yeah, Oracle, as you know. Beehive, but these are all enterprise high-end solutions. And the problem is, even normal people now have this problem. It's really out of control.
What's hard is that as a when you have, you know, 5 or 6 employees, it's hard to see why you should you know, add these tools. And I think Salesforce is not just because we work for them, but looking at all the options, they're probably one of the best as far as project management, that type of thing. I mean, at an enterprise, you know, like when you're going to do all of the stuff from CRM to you know, everything else. But the issue you get into is that you're little, and it's really hard to justify the cost and the effort to start then.
Right.
But what they all tell you is that when you're getting to 20 or 30 employees, if I had started this 3 years ago, you know, I can't even imagine how smooth this transition would be. And we got the memberships 3 years ago. We just never devoted enough time. So all I can say is that if you've got a little company that, whether it's Salesforce or Oracle or whatever, think about those kind of tools, because we really wish we had implemented them years ago.
Well, I will never use Lotus Notes again. I don't care. I do not care.
No, not that.
It's funny. I think everybody agrees that email is universally broken, but nobody has really figured out what to do in its place. So I don't know. That was a big rat hole. I'm sorry. And it all began because you said you didn't like mail, and then I had to find out why, and now I'm sorry.
There you go.
I think it's a feature.
That's how it goes.
I was going to say, just to Andy's point earlier, that we're in a very different market than we were when the 3GS and the 4S came out. I know Andy knows that.
Much more competitive.
Absolutely. And the thing with the 4S update is, again, we've heard that it's going to be the same casing again. And when you hear, about 2 years ago when Apple introduced the iPad, they were very successful in changing the conversation from spec sheets, feature lists, and technology into an experience debate. They had those Peter Coyote commercials, right. And they said it's not about being thin or fast and whatnot. Right. But now it's gone back to being almost a spec battle again and a feature set battle. And there's things like optical image stabilizers and digitizer pens and 1080p screens and
wireless charging. Yeah.
Yeah, NFC, all these things that people look at and they wonder why Apple doesn't have them. And Apple's never been quick about adding those things. The original iPhone had no 3G. The 4S had no LTE. The 5 has no NFC. Apple's always been very conservative with those kinds of technologies. So to say Apple's not innovative for having stuff that they were never market leading on is odd, but it's not the reality. I want to make it clear that this is part, I think, of the Apple is doomed general meme, but it's the perception that is now surrounding the idea that, oh, it's just going to be a 5S this year. Even though Apple's never announced it, may never make a product called the iPhone 4S, the perception is it's going to be a 5S, and that's not going to be enough.
It's your fault. We blame you. Well, to correct the perception, according to ComScore, Apple is the top, in the U.S. anyway, the top phone manufacturer. In fact, increased its lead. So Google is first in terms of platform with Android. Apple is second with iOS. But as iOS now gains on, believe it or not, iOS, thanks to the hot sales of the iPhone 5, is gaining on Android. In fact, Apple's gains, according to ComScore, in the hardware space were so large that not only did iOS gain significantly, Android actually took a hit. So it's Android, iOS, BlackBerry, Microsoft, and Symbian. And in terms of sales, the share of subscribers is let's see, point change 3.5. Anyway, you can see if you go read all this. It's too many numbers.
The Macglobe did an excellent column, and a lot of these surveys came out, and the headlines were still Android gains on Apple and Enterprise.
No. Enterprise, maybe.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the Apple grew a huge amount, but the headline focused on the small amount that Android. The headlines now are no longer as favorable to Apple as they were a year or two years ago. So it's a much harder climate. People were calling the iPhone 5 boring. Imagine what the presumption is they'll call an iPhone 5S. Oh, it looks the same.
Right. Apple went up. Apple's share of smartphones went up 3.5% in the last quarter. Google's dropped 1.3%. Maybe more to the point.
It certainly addresses the claim that Apple is facing a problem with the iPhone,
is what it's facing.
If Apple were failing to ship a product that was communicating to consumers, that would definitely be reflected in the sales numbers, and it's just not. So whatever Apple's doing, it's making its customers very, very happy.
Well, Apple's number one in terms of manufacturer. And the only reason Android's number one is because it's 18 different companies making it.
Yeah. Well, also internationally with the subsidies.
Yeah, these are U.S. numbers here. Yeah.
Right. Right. Internationally, that's the most interesting piece of data there is that if people are offered the choice between an iPhone and an Android phone and they both cost the same amount of money, so many more people are going for the iPhone in the U.S. When you go to another market where the iPhone costs substantially more than an Android phone, even a really, really substandard Android phone, a lot of people are saying, look, I would much rather have an extra 100 euro in my pocket or 200 euro in my pocket than have something that's a much, much better phone. So there's a lot of information to collate from all these pieces of data.
To me, one of the most interesting pieces in this ComScore study is that only 55% of Americans have smartphones. That means there's still a large number of people who haven't bought smartphones.
Who are those people?
Nobody we know.
I don't want to out anybody, but a friend of mine who is a senior contributor to a very prominent online Mac and Apple news publication has just a basic feature contract phone. Even though he can certainly afford an iPhone, he can certainly afford to have whatever he wants. He just wants to keep all that, as he puts, he wants to keep that crap out of his pocket.
You know, I wonder, there may be a backlash where people don't want, you know, the iWatch and Glass may be the thing that push us over the top where we just say, no, I don't want people sending me stuff in my pocket. I just, I need to make sure. Yeah,
I think it's going to be the opposite. I think we're going to find that our iPhone is
it's not enough.
Well, it's too much. It's like, oh, I got to carry this thing around.
Right.
You know, like I think that's going to be more of the issue. I think that there's a lot of day-to-day things that we're using our iPhone for that something like Glass or an iWatch would definitely fix.
Maybe. I don't know. You still have to have a phone for both of those devices, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
Pretty sure you will. I don't think they've yet. It's mostly battery is the issue. I don't think they've
battery
yet.
Battery is the big issue, but I think that there's
Enough phone. You're carrying a battery pack.
Well, again, I think that one of the things that is going to be interesting is that I think both Apple and Google need to attack this process of getting rid of the phone number one way or the other, which is that
I agree.
I have an always reachable. This is who I am. When you click on Alex, you're going to get me, and whether it's using cellular data or Wi-Fi data or whatever.
Google's
it is,
way ahead on that.
They're way ahead of that, and I think that Apple. This is like the big feature that Apple has to figure out is how to take what they did with iMessages and move it to the phone.
You know, who even has a stealth play in this game is Microsoft because of Skype.
Right. It's just that the problem is that
Skype. It turns out buying Skype might have been a really smart thing for Microsoft to do.
Oh yeah, I think it was a great idea.
Yeah.
I think they had to do it. I think that was I think that was probably one of the best purchases they've made in a long time. But one of the best things they've done. I don't think it was necessarily good for Skype, but I think it was good for Microsoft.
But it puts them in a position to make a phone that is not a phone, that is a VoIP phone.
Well, and I think that the issue is we still have to have a way for us to react. I mean, the problem right now is Skype is still a matter of, A, you know, opening it up and making sure that it's all there. And rather than, like, literally if it's built into the OS, like, this is the way it
can
works.
I just tell you, having used Windows 8 for a while, it's very hard to turn Skype off.
Well, and
I just
and
rebooted,
I don't know
Skype
like,
started, it's logged me in.
Right.
I mean,
right. That might be the...
That's where Microsoft's headed. That's why they're killing Messenger. Their IM solution is getting killed on the 15th in 3 days. Very abruptly, and the message from it every time you try to use it is, please go to Skype. They want Skype running in the background all the time, and then the next step is, by the way, you might as well have a phone number as long as you got Skype running.
Does FaceTime even load? I think it's just there, right? Whenever you turn on something, there's no separate app anymore.
FaceTime?
Yeah, right. I think that's probably the same
thing.
It
is, but the problem with FaceTime is that FaceTime, what I want is FaceTime. I essentially want FaceTime without the face part. Like the thing is, I don't really want to do FaceTime all the time.
That might be
the
problem.
And yes, you can close it. People send me, every time I say that, I get a whole bunch of emails and posts on my Twitter that say, you can just hide the app and then it's basically not FaceTime. But I don't want that. I just want to call someone. Yeah. I want to say, I just want to do a voice call to this person. And if they have an iPhone, it just does that.
iMessage and FaceTime linked, so it's just one thing.
I think that is such a missing piece of this communication process. And I want to call them, and I can decide whether it's going to ring on my iPad or on my iPhone or on my computer. Doesn't matter as a Mac user. It should be something that is just like, I just decide, okay, here, I'm here, or I can define where that phone call is going to go. And maybe it goes to all of them, and whichever I answer first is where it goes. But a lot of us have these multiple devices. We're trying to figure it out, and we don't. I want to be able to use my iPad with a headset, as a phone.
Remember the key feature of any communication system is the initial connection. Has to be the simplest part of the entire process.
Right.
And
right now,
as great
not,
as FaceTime is, you start with the question of does this person have an Apple product that I'm communicating with? Then if not, okay, do they have Skype? If not, okay, well, do they have this? And can I walk them through the process of installing Skype, or can I convince them to switch to an iPhone? Phone numbers are a problem. Voice communication is a problem. Email still is a problem. But the win is that it's something dumb that everybody knows how to use and everybody can support.
Well, I think the issue, though, is like, for instance, so when I'm overseas, which I do fairly often, I stop sending texts to people who have Android phones because now it's expensive. Like, it's costing me like 50 cents every time I talk to them, you know? And so like, I immediately, like, you know, if they don't have that, now I have to send them emails or figure out something. But I literally just cut everybody. Everybody gets cut off of communication when I go overseas, and I only do stuff with iMessage
iMessage.
It's going to cost me a lot of money. Yeah. Because iMessage is data, you know? And so that's nothing.
I mean, here's where Apple really missed the boat. And it's funny because they promised otherwise. They never put out, they said when they released FaceTime, this is an open standard, we're using open standards, and they never put out an API. Put out an API for messages. Had they done so, it could be cross-platform, and then they'd be very well positioned.
My understanding is they got sued on FaceTime. They've been sued once. They went to appeal. I believe they just lost the appeal, and I think the lawsuits kind of got in the way of their plans to re-release. Because FaceTime is all open standard technology anyway, and they were going to put their packaging of it together. And there was a company, I forget the name
but they've been sued,
I think, twice now.
So that's really interesting, because that's obviously then what Apple intended. And you see the big players, Microsoft and Google, doing this. Eventually, I don't think it's very long before we aren't using telephony anymore. Even the wireless companies are moving towards LTE data for voice. They haven't done it yet, but that's the plan. That's why they're rolling out LTE.
So hopefully, when the lawsuit is either settled, lost, won, whatever, then we can move ahead.
Oh, that's interesting. I have to look that up. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I believe they just lost the appeal, but I'm not positive.
And it's somebody who says we own the.
It's a patent troll, I think. Yeah.
You know,
or at least it was East Texas District Court.
That's a patent troll. Yeah. Or as I've learned by talking to our lawyers, you call them NPEs, because that's not as inflammatory. Non-practicing entities. And what it means is somebody who has a patent but never made a product or intended to make a product. In other words, they got the patent so they could sue people.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. I didn't know that. And that's, God, we pay such a tax in this country for these guys on innovation. It's very sad. It would make such a difference. And it would give Apple a real opportunity to be a player in this. And I think this is going to be a huge space. Mm-hmm. You pinpointed it, Alex. What you need is a cross-platform solution that lets you do text, voice, and if you want, video.
To any platform. To any.
To anywhere.
Phone. Yeah, like all of that stuff. And
Skype is close to that. Seamless. Skype is close to that.
Well, I'll tell you, the problem with Skype right now is that on my iPhone, I finally nailed the fact that if I open up Skype and leave it on in the background, it just drains the battery to the ground. I mean, it's like literally in an hour, my phone will be dead. You know, and so leaving Skype on an iPhone is not a good idea.
So the company the company suing Apple is called VernetX, VIRNETX, and you're right. About a week and a half ago, a judge in East Texas upheld the decision against Apple, saying that FaceTime infringes on their patents. Now, the judgment said that Apple will pay $368 million, which is not a huge amount for a company that has $140 billion in the bank. And the judge ordered the two companies to come to a licensing deal so that Apple could continue to use the patents. So that we actually are close to resolution of this, which may mean that Apple is in a position in a few months or a year. This lawsuit was also against Microsoft, which settled in 2010. And the company wanted $708 million, got half that.
So they usually do, I think. They sue someone, they get the money from that lawsuit and use that to start suing more and more people.
Oh, I could tell you a lot about that. I have some knowledge about this stuff now. Very interesting. Well, that maybe FaceTime, free FaceTime, free messages.
But the question is, why would that be in Apple's best interests? Because it's such a great value add. Just like Alex said, if you're talking to people who have iPhones, that's free messaging and it works and it doesn't really have any downside whatsoever as long as you're within that same ecosystem. So, I mean, I don't know.
The real issue is that
I wouldn't blame Apple for wanting to keep this an Apple exclusive product.
Yeah, but it makes it much less useful. And if there are cross-platform solutions like Skype,
it might. But the other advantage is when you own the ecosystem, you have a lot more control over whether it works or not. You know, once you start trying to play with everybody, then you have to deal with everybody. And so that is the one advantage that Apple has. And I have to admit that the reason that I slowly have been buying iPads stuff for my family is so that when we want to FaceTime,
everybody
just FaceTime. It's harder for me to try to explain to them how to use Skype or Hangouts or whatever, which is something that I use a lot, both of those.
This is
much more than FaceTime, but FaceTime is much easier if I just give them a platform and then they can just click on the button.
This is the great battle. This is the great battle, open versus closed. There's benefits to both.
There's also this thing that everyone likes to talk about, this company is open, this company is closed, but almost always companies keep closed what makes them money, like right. Google Search, Google AdSense, and they open up what fragments and affects the money of their competition. And, you know, Apple made WebKit. They didn't make it, but they've helped pioneer WebKit, and that's completely open. If Apple believes that FaceTime makes them money and it's worth owning it, then they'll keep it closed. Right. But if they believe that it creates a halo effect to Apple products, or that owning infrastructure in telecommunications is important enough for their future, then it might be in their best interest to open it. And that's usually how all these companies kind of measure.
Yeah. I can't think of a single case of Apple doing this, by the way. Even iTunes, they did their own thing on Windows. They made it. It was a big battle over whether to make a Windows version. They finally decided
to. I'm kind of tired of people saying that open is just universally a feature. Open is not a feature. It's something that can allow a feature to blossom and to be practical and useful. But every time I hear someone touting Linux or touting less standards compliant, less proprietary standard compliant technology, I'm like, okay, you're saying that open is better. In the sense that cannibalism is not better than, you know, not eating other people. What feature is the open nature of this
operating system
actually delivering to the users?
I'll give you the feature. Open APIs that other companies can create clients. And that would allow, for instance, somebody on Linux or Windows to create a FaceTime client.
Right.
And it would solve Alex's problem. That's what I mean by open.
Right. No, I'm just addressing a larger thing. I mean, people seem to think that open is just universally a good thing, as opposed to red is not universally a good color. It's a great color for a fire truck, not a good thing to wear at a funeral.
Would you agree that open is good for people and closed is good for companies?
Not necessarily. It depends on the implementation. I think Apple products are really the crown jewel of this argument, that it's the most locked down ecosystem ever.
Yeah, but it's good for companies.
But the fact of the matter is that it's also good for users, because these things work in a predictable manner. That if one company controls the horizontal and the vertical and the depth as well, that means that they can reduce the number of surprises that the user is actually going to experience.
I like my shiny boxes to be closed because they give incredibly good experiences, and I like all the protocols that come in and out of them to be open because that way I can switch whenever I want.
I would submit that one of the reasons Andy changed to an Android phone is because it's more open than the iPhone.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a happy medium someplace in between. I mean, to build upon Renee's analogy, I like to have a house with weather-tight windows that I can open and close when I choose to want a breeze.
Oh, I like.
I don't want to find out these things are sealed shut because the building super said, nope, we have air conditioning, which is much better for you than simply natural breezes. You're welcome. I want a breeze. It's nice outside.
Web 8801 says the future is not open or closed. It's a jar.
That's true.
I thought I heard a bong.
I think that we just have to remember that every company that is in business is looking to do two things. They're looking to control the areas that make the money and commoditize everything else.
Right. That's
right. Every company is looking to do that. And so, you know, and they're just picking their battles. You know, which part do we want to control to generate revenue? And everything else to them should be commoditized. It should be, you know.
I think it's more nuanced than that, Alex, because I think the way we got into this discussion is the issue of whether you could FaceTime from anybody but a Mac platform. One of the things that keeps you from using FaceTime is you have to know whether somebody has a Mac platform or not, an Apple platform or not. That's a disadvantage to the general widespread adoption of FaceTime. And I think that you could make the case that that would be good for Apple if it would open the APIs and let others develop clients on other platforms.
Well, but I think that my question would be, and that might be the case.
Is better, to have a phone that can call any phone in the country or a phone that can only call half the phones in the country?
Oh, yeah, but I think that, I think that would be an issue. But, I mean, I think that you'd always have a phone. I think that you're always going to have a phone that can call everyone. But the main thing is that what I'm mostly interested in, as I said, is to make sure that I can call Apple products, you know, on data. I mean, our company, as I said, a lot of us have Android phones. I have an Android phone. We use them a fair bit. You know, the standard is like everybody's got iPads at every location that we work at and everything else. And so for us, we're mostly focused on just making sure that works. I mean, I have to, you know, as a company that, you know, we do a lot of stuff that we occasionally we work as an open company, and a lot of times we work as a closed company where we control the entire pipeline. And when we control the whole pipeline of what we do, you know, it is more stable, it is more predictable, it is easier for us to produce a great product at a low price.
Right.
You know, and it's a dramatic difference than when we have to interchange with a whole bunch of other people to do that, because sometimes we fill a part and sometimes we fill the whole thing. And we can always tell our client that it's going to be a better solution if we control the whole thing.
I'm not arguing with you about that.
But I think that's why you keep things closed.
But that's the impediment to widespread adoption of FaceTime, period. That's why FaceTime hasn't taken off.
Yeah.
And why Skype has.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's...
Right?
There's an awful lot of people using FaceTime. It's just installed on everything.
But it's very clear. Here's an example. Skype versus FaceTime.
Yeah.
There's a clear winner.
Protocols have historically done really well when they're open.
And by the way, Skype is not open by any means. It's just cross-platform.
Right.
Well, it also gets to the point where open is so open to interpretation and definition, and people just use the word without specifying which meaning that they have for it.
I just want, as a user, I don't care, open, closed. And I know this is what users aren't thinking about that. They just say, I would love to not use my cell phone company, or maybe only use them as...
Yeah.
It's very analogous to what's happening with the television, where people want to use Comcast and Time Warner as a data company and not by the premium television service. And, of course, these companies hate that. The cell phone carriers hate messages because it rides on top of the data and supplants their very profitable SMS system. But that's where we're moving regardless, I think, and that's what customers want. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the product. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and it would be nice if it worked nicely and it was pretty. In fact, you could make the case that one of the reasons FaceTime didn't take off is because it only works about half the time. Really?
But Messages works great for all the reasons that Alex said.
Yeah, but Messages is confusing a little bit to me. Like, maybe it's solved now.
Because you have a problem where you don't know whether this is being sent through the there's color codes that tip you off whether or not something is being sent through the text messaging network or through the Messages network. But then what if someone moves from a phone to another device and your conversation was being done through text message? Is iMessage smart enough to know that, okay, hey, he's on an iPad now. Hey, that iPad is on the LTE network. Right. I can reroute through this now. And in my experience, it's just not that clever enough to make that switch.
I see that one jumping back and forth all the time when I'm using it. And I get, again, like the thing is, we send lots and lots and lots of images. And again, when someone has an Android phone, one of the reasons we don't supply Android phones to everybody in the company is because with iMessage, I can sit there and send I can text all those images to someone from a site that we're scouting or whatever. And I can text things to people. And if they've got Android, I know that that's $1.50 each. You know what I mean? Like,
if
every time I send that image.
It's a shame that Google Voice doesn't support MMS or some sort of text pictures, because Google Voice works. It works for messaging cross-platform. It works with phone number. Right. If I could just get everybody to use my Google Voice number, and my Gmail account, it works totally cross-platform, works everywhere. It's not great on the iPhone because you have to run a Google Voice app, but it works. Mm-hmm. And but there is one big issue. You can't send images.
And it's U.S. only still, Leo.
Is it?
They keep promising. Yeah.
It's worthless. Then forget it. Yeah, I didn't realize that. Oh, that's worthless then.
Yeah, they've been promising it to go international for years and it hasn't.
I didn't realize that. Well, that's no good.
And I admit that Google Voice is one of the big things. That, I mean, if it did images, and it is one of the things. Yeah, and international, it would change our view of Android. You know, I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
You
know. Oh, I'm disappointed. I forgot about that. It's not. Yeah, never mind. Forget I mentioned it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Phil Schiller says, don't use Android. In a cryptic tweet. And I want to ask, you mentioned the wireless charging. Any rumors? I'll ask Renee if there are any rumors about wireless charging on the iPhone or an iPad. I would love that. It's one of the things I would like to get. You know, Windows phones have it, and I would like to get that in my next phone. Just plop it.
The Palm Pre had it.
The Pre had it, right.
Yeah.
Does your BlackBerry have it?
I don't know. Actually, I didn't look. It might. It's got a plastic back, but it's got a battery.
Do you like that Z10?
It's not, it's a version one product. It's nowhere near the version one product, the G1 was, but it's really nice. I like the concepts. I like the gestures. I like the way they thought about the interface and the way that they did the BlackBerry balance between business and between personal. It's got a lot of really, really good ideas.
It's so funny because this is starting to sound familiar. Isn't that what we said about Windows Phone? Really great ideas, really nice implementation, beautiful. I'm not going to use it. This BlackBerry 10, really great implementation, really good ideas. It's really pretty. I'm not going to use it.
Before we go to the commercial, before I forget, now Renee, when you said that's not the same, not where the G1 was, do you mean in a good way or in a bad way?
Well, like the G1, if you remember, it had that Google search field, and if you closed the keyboard, it would ask you to input in a search field, and you physically had no way of inputting it.
Horrible.
Or a game would say like push up to continue, and you had no idea if it was the four way up or stroke up or so. This is, it just has
Android,
weird
Android 1.5 was not
no.
a really
no, but you could see, like Renee said, you could see the future a little bit. It was like a window into, hey, this may.
I think one line that sticks out for me from my review of the G1 was, you've got to really, really hate Apple to buy this phone.
You
got to
want it real bad.
Yes.
No, it's nice. Like, it's got, like I said, a few little version 1 quirks, but it looks like BlackBerry is fixing. They're doing updates already, and I like the idea of being able to quickly gesture into all parts of the navigation. I think that's really phenomenal.
Yeah.
We'll see. I always see it like, because I do a lot of work in DC, and I'll be in DC and I'll look at someone, you know, there's a lot of BlackBerries in DC, and you just look at them like, really?
Oh yeah, but there's for a lot of good reasons really why the government still uses BlackBerries.
Yeah, but they all have their government
second
phone,
phone,
which is the BlackBerry, and then they have their own, which is an Android or Mac.
Yeah, the Samsung ads have made great hay with that.
Yeah. Safe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's safe. That's the new safe thing, because they're really trying to convince people it's safe to use Android. Safe to use Samsung, not even Android.
Well, Phil Schiller will teach them.
Yeah, we'll show you. I'll just tweet about that. No, but you know, we have it because we're tech journalists. We are always looking. We're trying to find a crystal ball that we could look into the future. So we'll look at things like Glass or BlackBerry X10 or Chrome OS and see the future. But don't confuse that with us saying that's a product you should buy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Right. But there's something there. Yeah. We see something happening.
When I write reviews, I feel I have to be very, very careful about making in paragraph number 1 saying, I'm not saying you should buy it, but there's a lot of interesting things going on, and then I'll go up from there. Otherwise,
Exactly.
People were asking me why didn't you switch to Windows Phone, and I had to say, because I've heard about these things called apps, and I really think it's a great idea that I want my phone platform to have.
I think a lot of people think that we're partisan in these games, but we just love technology.
Right.
And almost all of us.
Right.
I used to have Windows Phone, Xbox, and PC exclusively in my house, and then I liked something else better.
Right.
And maybe one day I'll like something else better again. But as a fan of technology, it's the first time every major platform has great devices on it, and I think that's... Yeah. An amazing thing, and I want to try as many of them as I can.
Precisely.
Well, what I love is the fact that they're so close in parity, which is just creating this just intense growth in our I think we're really beating up on Moore's Law in a lot of ways. Not so much in the speed of the processor, but beating up on how quickly we expect to see incredible leaps in technology because there's so much competition in this area. We're really in that kind of the railroads moment. You know, for smartphones still. I think we think that everybody has them, but really, as you were talking about, Leo, before...
45%.
Still don't have them, and we're still talking about the rest of the world. So we're still in that crazy growth period where there's just a lot of creativity and a lot... You know, this will all probably settle down, and they'll be implanted in our brains.
I don't want it to settle down. That's the reason we become tech journalists, because we want to see what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next. We're a little strange that way. I'll tell you what's next, a commercial, and then we'll be back with more. Alex Lindsay, Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannacco, we're talking Mac, we're talking Apple, we're talking phones, we're talking about whatever the hell we want to talk about. That's right. That's the truth. Sorry, girls. I apologize. She says, that was cute. It's okay. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm. It's better than a law firm. It gives you self-help legal services so you can do the stuff you need to do without paying big legal fees. For instance, incorporate your business or form an LLC at LegalZoom starting at $99. That's what I did. And man, it was easy. You walk through a step-by-step process, and it's such a big deal. If you're starting, you know, you want a startup, you got an idea, you want to protect it. They also do trademarks. You know, if you're a blogger, you got a brand? Did you finish your trademark, OMG Chad?
I'm still working on it.
Pretty soon he's going to have TM next to his name.
Right.
I love that. Copyrights, patents, even things like NDAs. If you're in business, I hate to say it, there's stuff you got to do that's legal. I've learned. And a lot of times you don't want to retain a law firm or a lawyer because it's hundreds of bucks an hour. So take a look at LegalZoom. Family, too. If you don't have a will, you know the state and courts decide what happens to your, not just your assets, but your kids. You can establish a will, just $69. A living trust, very affordable. In the past 12 years, over 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom to make those companies, those wills, those trusts, those trademarks. It's a very simple, it's really gotten faster and easier than ever before, an online step-by-step guide. And this is new, and I love this. If you have questions and you say, I want some advice, you can talk to a LegalZoom legal plan attorney. And they've set the prices ahead of time, so you know how much it's going to cost. It's still very affordable. They have profiles and unedited customer reviews, so you can pick an attorney that's just right for you. It's not available in all states, most states. LegalZoom.com. Visit LegalZoom.com. Browse around. Take a look at all the things you can do, and do them. Don't put this off. I'm telling you, I'm so glad I did, and I think you will want to, too. We're still operating off of the LLC documents I did in 2005 for $99.
They stand the test of time.
And, you know, we now have, because we have to, a firm. I don't just have an attorney. We have a firm. We have several firms, actually, under retainer. And one of our attorneys is like $800 an hour. And if you sit, and sometimes you sit in meetings with attorneys, and there's three or four in the room or on the phone. And if you do the math, you realize this call is costing me $2,000 an hour. And it's just chilling. If you don't need to do it, don't. LegalZoom.com. I'll tell you what, we're going to make it possible for you to save some money and give us credit if you do decide to sign up for a LegalZoom plan. You might want to use our offer code MBW, and they'll take $10 off. So that makes that will just $59, or the LLC just $89. $10 off when you use the offer code MBW, LegalZoom.com. I cannot recommend them more highly. I really believe in this idea. Wireless charging. We're going to get it, Renee?
If it's a 5S like we've heard, then there's very... capacitive charging right now, there's two big players. There's the PowerMat people, and I believe it's pronounced Qi. One has a Starbucks deal. One has widespread support with a bunch of manufacturers. And it's one of those chicken and the egg things where if Apple decided to pick a side, it could probably help move us towards a standard. I haven't heard about wireless charging. Phil Schiller made those comments about NFC and wireless charging not being mainstream technologies right after the iPhone 5 launch last year. But I'd like to see it one day. Like I said, the Palm Pre has had it. That is what's in 2009, 2010. I think it's a mature technology. I think it'd be a great addition. And if you start doing things like watches, or you have a bunch of different iPads or iPods lying around, being able to just stack them on a mat is a much more attractive solution than having to have 800 cables lying everywhere in your house.
It's capacitive, not inductive.
So, well, there's two. There's inductive, and there's, I forget, Palm Pre had inductive charging, and the Samsung Galaxy S
has the other kind.
Three had the other kind.
Oh.
And then there's the different brands, the PowerMat brand and the Qi brand.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I think about with this is that I think it works well with people who have great home bases, whether that's the office or the house or whatever. I think that for me, I travel a lot, and I think about how many things I charge. And, you know, I get concerned that when we get into that, it's the unit cost of charging each thing becomes much higher. And that's the only thing that I get concerned about when I think about a lot of these technologies and whether I'd actually use them or not.
Inductive charging, also known as wireless charging, uses an electromagnetic field to transfer the energy. According to Wikipedia, it's sent through an inductive coupling to an electrical device, which can then use that energy to charge batteries. So it's like a magnet.
And it was like a friend of mine, Dieter Bohn, is now at The Verge. He put them into his car. He put them everywhere. So he could just come in, slap the phone down on his dashboard and drive. And again, Starbucks is apparently rolling them out into a lot of their restaurants, and there's probably going to be hotel deals, and it won't be ubiquitous, especially at first, but it'll be interesting.
You don't lower risk of electrical shock. It's safer for medical implants, which is interesting. You go through the skin instead of wires, of course. Lower efficiency, and it wastes heat. It is more costly, of course, to build the electronics, and the charging is slower. Have you tried it? Is it a lot slower?
It's appreciably slower. Yeah. I've never timed it. I did have it with I did have one of those touchstones for the Palm Pre, and you know it is gimmicky in a way because it's one of those things that appeal to us geeks, us nerds, much more. Oh look, I can just slap my phone down and it charges. Whee!
Right.
Would my mom use it? I don't know yet, and I think that's one of those things where Apple usually waits a generation or two before picking a side and embracing a technology.
Luis in our chat room is pointing out it's been used with electric toothbrushes for a long time. That's right. My electric toothbrush, you just put it on the stand and it charges.
But it is a cool example of the sort of technology that can sort of hide inside the device until the user is ready to start embracing it. I mean, the weird thing about inductive charging is that the problem that you're freeing people from is the problem of having to do this.
Right. Not easy,
oh
was
my
that?
God, that? Oh, my God. That's so if you're trying not to drop.
For those of you listening at home, he was plugging in a lightning cable. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that takes like no time. But I feel about wireless charging the same way I feel about NFC, where as long as it doesn't appreciably make the device cost a lot more money, so long as it doesn't make it so thick that people are going to be looking at this and thinking, oh my God, that's one big chunky phone, it can be a thing that's just there lurking until the moment in which someone just sort of happens to introduce you to NFC or introduce you to wireless charging and you realize that, hey, that's kind of a cool thing to have. And then it doesn't confuse until you discover it. Then when you discover it, it might transform the device for you.
There are, by the way, working on inductive charging for vehicles.
Yeah, at CES every year, you see the big companies, PowerMat and Qi, always talk about the partner licensing agreements. And I think Nissan was going to put them into the cup holders or something on their cars. It's one of those, I don't know if it's a checklist item now or if it's a badge of honor item at this point, but it definitely is gaining a little bit of traction.
And I would guess that's what near field communication uses is some sort of induction.
It's RFID, yeah. I think.
Yeah, that's how RFID works, because the tag has no power, but it gets power via inductance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's that thing that, and Matthew Panzerino had a great article from the Next Web this weekend about how the one fatal flaw in the iPhone and every phone and every gadget is battery life, and because it doesn't progress as fast. And, you know, I look at an iPhone 5, and if Apple had come out and said, right now they said the iPhone 5 is much thinner than the iPhone 4S and it gets the same battery life. But if they'd come out and said the iPhone 5 is every bit as thin as the 4S and, hey, it gets 2 days of battery life. I mean, I think I would have made that trade, like the Droid Razor Max sort of decision. Absolutely. And I'm not sure we keep needing the thinner phone rather than the longer lasting phone.
I was thinking about that. I think I wrote something a couple months ago about that, about how this might be the time that Apple has to sort of give up the idea of making thinner devices with each iteration. And not just the idea of putting more battery space in there, but also there's going to be a time in which to do what Apple wants to do with a camera, they're going to be hitting the wall of limitations about how good a camera you can put into a micro thin device and still make it a superlative device. If they, I love to imagine that somewhere inside of Apple there was a what if in which they're saying, well, we will never ship. We're not necessarily going to ship this, but build the best camera you can possibly and practically put into an iPhone, and it doesn't matter if you have to make it thicker. We want to see how what the visual cost is going to be if we decide that we want to make the best 8-megapixel camera that's ever been put inside a phone and ever will be put inside a phone.
It's always bothered me that the battery technology just doesn't seem to move with the same lightning speed everything else is. We're still using ancient technology, in effect.
They do all sorts of tricks to try to get it longer, but there's not a solution. There's just more advanced trickery that they can do to reduce power to commands, turn things on, turn things off.
I got to think in a lab somewhere, there's something that's lots more,
that's
quantum
that's
singularities.
Well, that's the trickle effect of Tesla, because it's been said quite accurately that Tesla is really a battery company. And just cars is the thing they put the batteries into, because a lot of the really great new science about how to make batteries work better is really being funded by Tesla. As a matter of fact, Elon Musk, I think in either an interview or some of the conversations he was having around South by Southwest was talking about how he was trying to advise airlines on how to avoid the problems that cause a big relapse. Because he's saying, though, here's the problem. You can have the exact same battery life, the exact same parameters for these batteries. All you have to do is package them in this way inside the container, and this is how they will actually work. So
everybody in the chat room is saying, because we talked about it on Security Now on Wednesday, graphene is the next big leap forward. I love this. You don't see this very often on Wikipedia. This article may be too technical for most readers to understand, but it's an atomic scale honeycomb lattice of carbon atoms. It's literally one atom thick. And I don't know exactly how that helps you with batteries, but apparently
very fragile.
No, it's the toughest material known to man for its thickness.
for its thickness, but I'm saying it's just, yeah. You know, if you got some, if I had a sheet of something that was one atom thick, I'd.
Well, you could probably tear it.
On the edge. I mean, talk about a paper cut.
But this is what's remarkable about it is how strong it is. Right. It's a fullerene structure named after Buckminster Fuller.
You know, Apple gets hit sometimes for the lack of repairability of their devices, but when they announced those first non-changeable batteries in the MacBooks and the iPad, those are just giant sealed batteries. They poured battery into every millimeter and every milliamp that they could. And that's one of the ways that they try to get around it, you know, to Andy's point about how you package the batteries.
Right.
But it's going to hit a hard limit, especially if you do want to get thinner. And
we got it.
And I will say that battery life on all of my devices is far more important to me than their thickness.
I
mean, my iPhone is always thicker because generally I'm waiting to go buy a new Mophie, but for the iPhone 5. But generally, all my iPhone 4S and everything else was in a case all the time. It was in a Miley or Mophie case all the time because.
Mophie's out. The Mophie Air is out.
I know.
It's my pick of the week. No spoilers.
Nope. Yeah. X-Nay on the X-Nay. Phil Schiller says on Twitter, he doesn't tweet much, but when he does, it's pithy. Be safe out there. And then he links to an F-Secure article which says that Android is terribly dangerous. I might point out, there was an interesting article I read today, and I don't know if we have it in our show notes, but about an issue that could be a huge issue on iOS, particularly on iPhones, these configuration profiles. And I had one, you've perhaps seen these on your iPhone. I had one installed for a beta of a program I was testing that wasn't yet in the App Store. But these profiles are installed often by your carrier on your phone. And a malicious profile on your phone could give a bad guy access to everything, including SSL, web surfing, passwords, texts, everything. There's nothing innately malicious about it. It needs to be used. But, and they point out in this article, which is on thenextweb.com, there are a lot of companies using these in ways that are fundamentally risky. For instance, AT&T, which I think sells a few iPhones, AT&T stores were regularly handing out a printed document that told users to download a profile from unlockit.co.nz. It's a site that hosts APN configuration files for international travelers. It is a third-party site. It did not use SSL. It was not a secure connection. And so AT&T was telling customers, oh, yeah, you want to configure your phone for international sites, just download these profiles. These are inherently dangerous. Now, they weren't dangerous, of course, but the point is that that's really a dangerous thing to do.
And Apple used to give out profiles sometimes. If you had battery issues and you got to advanced Apple tech support, they might give you a profile that would let them monitor all the battery usage.
But, of course, if Apple gives it to you, that's safe. The issue is it can be installed very quickly and easily by going to a website and saying, yeah, install that profile. And be very careful about that because this is a huge vector.
Especially if you beta test, if you use Test Flight or Hockey, they will always install profiles, and you might get to a point where you get them so often you're not paying attention. But just like on a computer, when a thing pops up and says you've got a virus, click here, or do you want the latest XYZ, click here. Never ever click there unless you read really carefully.
Yeah. Do you know? Because I found one a while ago from a beta of an app that I was testing, and I removed it as soon as I found it because I wasn't testing anymore. But do you know, Renee, where you would see these? Do you go to General?
Yeah, they're in Settings, General, and I'll scroll down to find the exact. But there's a whole list of them.
Cellular?
It's towards the bottom.
You must have some. Or maybe I don't have them because I don't have any on.
Yeah, I have a bunch of them.
What is it? What entry?
Profile. So General at Profiles. It's right above Reset on the bottom.
Okay, so I don't have any because I have none. But if you have Profiles installed, you'll see Profiles there. Open that. And if you don't recognize it, take right the here. Dang thing off, right?
Absolutely. You can, and if worse comes to worse, if you remove it in error and your next try to install doesn't install, you can just re-download the profile. So it's very low risk.
It does underscore that almost every threat that's going to hit your device requires some form of user interaction.
Right.
So,
but we know very well with phishing scams and stuff that most of us, even some of us, fall for this stuff all the time.
Oh, of course.
And normal people, you know, especially if AT&T says, oh, you know, go to this site and download this thing. So, Phil, I agree. Be safe out there, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's a little mistakenly cocky to say, well, the problem's all on Android side.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially when you get some eye-watering numbers that describe how many instances of malware exist for the Android platform. But if you limit it to just the sort of stuff that actual normal users are going to encounter, if you say, well, how many instances of malware are spread through the Google Play Store, and it drops down to something that's statistically practically nothing. I think the largest number I've seen is about 0.5% of all instances of malware would be delivered through the Google Play Store.
And
it's not an issue.
The reason people assume that Apple's safe is because all apps are vetted. And so the reason I mention this is that there are vectors for you to sideload that is totally wide open. And if you could be tricked into sideloading these configuration profiles, it's not an app. You don't need to worry. It's easy.
And the same thing applies if you jailbreak. You know, you're told to change your SSH password. You're warned not to go to certain repositories or to stick to trusted repositories. It assumes a level of user control, and with that user control comes the Spider-Man line, right? Like great power comes great responsibility.
Right. Somebody in the chat room said this, and he's absolutely right. No, nothing is secure as long as users are using it.
Well, I think also Apple users, I mean, the thing that I always worry about is that we really risk a smallpox epidemic, you know, the way the Native Americans risked it, you know,
because we've been clean for so long.
We just don't have a lot of interaction with viruses, you know. Right. And so the thing is that we don't really, you know, I know that there's lots of people. I can even be a little bit brazen about clicking on things because I'm like, it's not going to really do anything to me. I mean, I'm not worried about getting, you know, and the thing is that it could move. You know, if something opens up, I think we do have to stay vigilant and not get cocky about it. Because if something opens up, a lot of us aren't really ready. We don't have the tools. We're not used to being, you know, in that environment.
Here's an exclusive from Reuters. Apple has held talks with Beats, Jimmy Iovine, Dr. Dre's company, on a potential partnership involving Beats' planned music streaming service. According to Reuters, who says three people familiar with the situation told us this.
Ice Cube told them.
Apple,
Ice Cube and MC Ren.
Apple CEO Tim Cook met with Jimmy Iovine, CEO of Beats, in late February to find out about Project Daisy, which is their music subscription service, which they announced in January. Eddie Q was at the meeting. According to sources, Cook expressed interest in Daisy's business model, its rollout plans, but did not discuss specifics of a deal. Does it make sense that Apple might be moving towards subscription? And if they do, would they partner with somebody else, like Beats?
I don't think they would.
Doesn't sound incredible, yeah.
It's I've thought in the past that Apple and Beats have a lot in common in terms of wanting to have a brand that people recognize, not only having technology, but also being a recognized consumer brand. But yeah, I mean, if they would want to do a radio service, if they would want to do a subscription service, really they are a content company. They would want to own all that. They wouldn't like to be beholden to anybody else, would they?
Right.
I think the only reason that Apple would partner with someone is to get the in that they need if they're having trouble with negotiations. I mean, I think that if Apple can do it on their own, they would definitely do it on their own. I think it sounds like it's pretty sticky, the situation, as far as what it takes to get at least what Apple wants, probably a certain level of control and a level of control over the monetary distribution, as well as the look and feel of the product. And so I think that trying to hash that out with the music industry has probably become traditionally sticky.
I think it's also, I mean, Apple's in the music business. My guess is that, and Jimmy Iovine is not only with Beats, he's chairman of, I forget the exact long string of record companies that he's chairman of.
Oh, yeah, it's been around for years.
They routinely meet with these people, and this sounds to me like one of those routine meetings that he has with the heads of every record cable and discusses all services that they're, I mean, it would almost be negligent in Apple's position not to meet with everybody when they have the opportunity.
Well, according to the newspaper of record, the New York Post, Record Labels is objecting to Apple's proposed low royalty rate for streaming service.
Which was Iovine again, I think, saying that Apple was lowballing him.
Yeah, 6 cents per 100 songs streamed. Pandora pays 12 cents. Apple wants a rate that's lower than Pandora's, said one high-level executive, probably Iovine. Is that how you pronounce it, Iovine?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
I guess I don't understand, you know, not, maybe I don't have an MBA, so I don't understand why. It seems like the negotiation, rather than a per song basis, really, to me, it seems like it makes more sense for there to be, you know, we have this subscription service and we're going, and really the more the agreement is that we're going to give you 60% or 70% of the revenue of that subscription service. And then we're going to track how many people watch all these songs and fractional songs and everything else. And then if your song gets, if your, you know, content gets 10%, you know, we can give you 10% of that 60% that we agreed to, or the 70% that we agreed to, or whatever that number is. You know, and it's a pot that's being cut up rather than a per song. It seems like that the per song is a very, I'm sure it makes sense to somebody, but it seems like it's saying, you know, then we can negotiate what the total percentage that Apple's going to take out of that. And then everyone else is just sharing in that pot, so to speak. You know, it's variable based on how many people are there. And you know, it seems like it would be a fairly fair way to do it, but I guess I'm probably missing something.
Here's about the worst infographic I've ever seen from the New York Post. Apparently, Justin Bieber is somehow involved in this. Cash-rich Apple's attempt to start a music streaming service featuring artists like Justin Bieber has run into turbulence after it offered record labels just one half the price Pandora is paying. Spotify pays, I didn't know this, 35 cents per 100 songs streamed. It's the highest.
Wow.
iHeartRadio, 22 cents. Huh?
Do we know if they get more for paying more, or is it just what they managed to get gouged for?
Well, they, you know, weren't they kind of the first to do that? Maybe not. Pandora's older than that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And then there's the question of ad revenue. Like, do you how valuable is this? Not there's so many different revenue streams you can get off of a subscription service. Not only people paying to access the content, but also the information that the publishers could get out of listenership from this relationship. Plus, if you're not necessarily making these folks pay a lot of money for the service, how valuable are ad impressions given how closely you can target a specific group of people
right.
by throwing up the right ad at the right time through the right song?
One must assume that Apple started at the lowest amount it could mention and then will go up from there. It's called negotiation, kids.
Yep. Right.
And, of course, where they're not going to start with $1.50. They started at 6 cents. Well, you know, Eddie Q, he's tough. He's tough but fair. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. Ooh, I like the new Squarespace commerce. You got to take a look. Squarespace.com. Squarespace, we've mentioned before, is probably the best kind of all-in-one hosting and content management solution out there. It is the best. We try all the time to bring Squarespace sites down. Can't do it. That's why we use it for our Inside Twit blog. It's, besides the best hosting, got the best content management system. Beautiful templates, easy. You don't have to be a web pro to design a gorgeous, unique-looking site. But if you are a pro, they have a great developers platform with its own IDE and syntax coloring and all that stuff for JavaScript, for CSS. Really sweet. It's the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, a blog, a portfolio, and now online store. They've added commerce, and this is going to change the industry. It is a very powerful, very flexible e-commerce solution that works with every one of their templates. So if you have an existing site, it's a snap to add it. Physical or digital goods, so you can sell MP3s, for instance, or sell CDs. You could sell ebooks or hardcover books. It works for both. You could set up coupons, order management, like tracking orders, email updates, shipping labels. Really fantastic. They have a one-step, simple merchant account setup. So even if you can't currently accept a credit card, they'll set that up for you right away. What is it? They use Stripe? We talked about this last time.
Yeah.
So
let me find out.
And the best part is the whole commerce solution, if I go to pricing, is $24 a month. And they don't take a cut of your sales or anything. I mean, that's it. $24 a month. So now you got three pricing plans at Squarespace. This is if you buy an annual plan. If you don't buy an annual plan, it's $30 a month. I'm going to tell you why you do want to buy an annual plan in a second. But here's the three different pricing. There's the standard pricing at $8 a month for an annual plan. Unlimited, which is actually the one we've been touting for a long time. Unlimited pages, galleries, blogs. Unlimited bandwidth. You'll never get a bill for excess bandwidth. Unlimited storage and contributors. But then on top of that, unlimited for $24 a month, you get all of that, plus unlimited physical products, unlimited digital products, a mobile store, inventory tracking. It does taxing. this is actually, just by itself, that is huge. Because every state, even in some states like California, there's different taxes in every county. It does all of that. Full tax and shipping rules by region. And
this was quite a thing. I have to say that
huge.
We've been using Squarespace for a long time, and we had to hire an outside consultant to tie in the e-commerce into our Squarespace site. You know, it was quite a thing. So now we're researching moving all of that stuff back into
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Now, huge. When you buy a year plan on any of these plans, you get the custom domain, you free registration of a domain name. They hook it up to your page. Of course, great support. That Squarespace is famous for that. Both phone support, but they have great help and tutorials. They do workshops. You'll also get the best discount because we're going to give you 10% off your first purchase on a new account. How about that? All you have to do is the offer code MacBreak3. So you can try all this for free. You don't need a credit card. You don't need our coupon code or anything. Just go to squarespace.com and say, try it. And you get a 2-week trial, including all the e-commerce. Set it up. Import all your content from your existing site. Everything will move over, including all the links, all the images, even the comments. And by the way, you're never trapped. You can always move them out too. They support all the major blog APIs. Try it free for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, that's when I want you to use MacBreak3 to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace.com. There is just no better way to do this.
And it is Stripe that they use
Stripe,
for their...
Yeah.
Yep, you're
Stripe's
right.
A very good service. So they'll set you up through Stripe. It's all automatic.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you want to know what it looks like, that you can see it. They use a Stripe API. Just slick. I'm not surprised. Anthony and crew are just the best. Squarespace.com. Use MacBreak3 as the offer code. Field trips on iOS. Are you excited? Okay. You know what field trip is? You should use this. If anybody should use this, Alex, it's you.
Okay.
Because you travel a lot. So it's a Google app we've had on Android for a while. And what it is, it's like a tour guide in your pocket. So as you when you walk by something that's of interest, it can actually start speaking to you or bing you. But I like it when it says, hey, on your left, that house was used for Peggy Sue Got Married.
You are absolutely right. I don't know about field trip. And I was on a trip 12 years ago, and we talked about this whole thing that what you really need is a GPS-driven tour.
Yes. This does it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'm getting it.
It's free. Field trip. Okay. So the negative is if you turn it on, it'll alert you all the time.
Right.
Even in Petaluma, there's a ton of stuff. Over here is where Sublime played its last concert. Over there is where Peggy Sue Got Married was filmed. That's where, you know, even in Petaluma. So I can only imagine the places you go, it must be like crazy.
Yeah, I don't think I'd keep it on all the time. But I could definitely see myself like, I have to wander through Austin or whatever, and I could definitely see myself.
Oh, perfect for Austin.
Yeah.
Yep. And then John C. Dvorak wrote a funny column which misstated the situation a little bit. John and I went down to Apple last week to talk to the iTunes folks, who are great, by the way, really supportive of podcasts. I want to thank them. And John, unbeknownst to me, was doing a little field test. He was down there with our marketing guy, Glenn Rubenstein. Glenn had his car, John had his car, and Lisa and I had our car. And we apparently were all three using different GPS devices. And John wanted to try Apple Maps. And unbeknownst to everyone else, he said, lest they race around like madmen, this was a battle of the systems. Actually, I was using Waze, which I love. He says I was misdirected. I wasn't. I just took a wrong turn. Sometimes you must have this happen with GPS. I'm driving along. It says, turn left here. And I go, what?
Yep.
Bye. So that happened once or twice. But that's not Waze's fault. He says he got lost for unknown reasons. Okay, this is because Glenn said we're going to the falafel drive-thru, and I thought he said we're going to the House of Falafel. Different place. So that wasn't Waze's fault. Glenn was using Apple Maps, which he said worked really well. And then John, I think, was using, he has an Android phone, Nexus 4. And he said that Glenn won every time because Apple Maps was so dang good. Well, I bet it is in Cupertino. I bet it's the best. What is Apple Maps getting better?
It's getting better at the macro level. If you're a really important place, they just did the Japan update without having to even push a new firmware.
Wow.
So a lot of the big places, if you're a little house that's been in the middle of a park for the last, 6 months, you're probably still in that little park because they haven't gotten to you yet.
Right.
They don't have the same team. I mean, Google has thousands. I don't know if it's thousands, but they're said to have tons and tons of people on the map team actually going and physically verifying hospitals and emergency rooms and all those things. And Apple just doesn't have that corporate infrastructure yet.
And I would say there's not a lot of excuse for it, given that they put out a map app not to hire the infrastructure to do
right.
that.
Well, that's the question is, they obviously realize they blew it and they've been hiring and working hard. And the question is it noticeably getting better? John says yes.
But I mean, geo teams, people aren't, like we've spoken before about how it's hard to find engineers in Silicon Valley and it's hard to right. find good geo team members as well.
Right.
But I think that it's hard. I agree. It's definitely hard to find engineers to do this sort of work. But I think that the other thing we need to look at is just the verification of a lot of things. And mm-hmm. I think that's a trainable solution in a lot of ways. I mean, and I think that, getting out there, I think there's just a lot of groundwork that Google has done over a decade that Apple hasn't. And Apple, if they're going to really get into this game, if they really want to own this, they're going to have to put a lot of investment into catching up.
Yeah, there's a lot of boots on the groundwork involved in this. I mean, some of their competitors, mm-hmm. they have the policy where they don't simply trust data to tell them there's a hospital somewhere. They actually send someone out to verify the hospital is there. Not only that, but they also map the location of the emergency room entrance so that their software can guide you exactly where you need to go. But that said, I think that the POI database on Apple Maps has gotten so much better. I mean, well, okay, could hardly have done otherwise, But I hope that Maps has shed like its original stigma, because they have been doing a lot of work on it. That those improvements are easy to encounter when you're using it as a standard navigator. As I do every couple of weeks, though, I do check to see if my favorite problem or my least favorite problem with it are still there. I keep being more and more direct about this. This is a map of the Boston Public Garden. And it's still labeled as the public gardens.
Oh.
Okay, this is not something that you do to somebody who lives in Boston. Although they have correctly labeled it Boston Common. Another common problem is calling it Boston Commons. But it's like I don't know. It's like that one sour note in a very very large symphony that you have to know where that note is supposed to be in order to even notice it. But if you do notice it, it's like common. Public garden. It's not the gardens. It's one big, beautiful garden. Will you please fix this?
It's like when John, every time I say daylight savings time, John Slanina comes running over and says, saving!
Yeah, I freely admit this is my version of ATM machine. It's like a million people will hear that and not even trip over it, but it's like it's AM, automatic teller machine. You don't have to say machine twice.
Now, this is interesting because somebody in the chat room says every time I search for an address in Alabama, I get Ohio. And so I entered in the address, and it's interesting because, yes, indeed, I get this pop-up which says, did you mean? And I gave it the street, the city, the state, and the zip code, and it says, do you mean Madison, Ohio or Madison, Alabama? But at least it gives me the pop-up. But it's interesting that it doesn't, even though I've given it the fully qualified address, it's still confused about what that is.
That happens with a lot of systems. I mean, I try Nokia Maps. I try Maps on Google Android. And it's no system is 100% where no system has ever freed me from the responsibility of saying, no, if I wanted Waltham, Colorado, I wouldn't have said Waltham, Massachusetts. Now, would I?
It is, after all, a computer.
Just be fun. Why don't you guide me to the city that's about 11 miles away as opposed to the one that's 1,100 miles away? Why don't we just maybe make a guess that maybe that's what I wanted?
Right.
So, yeah, I've had all of them. I had Nokia drive me. Nokia has Here Maps now. That's their big thing. And they're putting Here everywhere.
Right.
So I was trying it, and it literally had me drive in a circle before I could continue on my route. Different points, they all fail. It's almost like a comedy of errors. And you just try to pick the one that is the most reliable for you.
Well, yeah. And I actually had my first. I mean, usually Google Maps is very reliable. Last night at 1:30 in the morning after I landed, it turns out two highways going out of the airport of Austin and out of the airport to Austin, and Google couldn't figure out which one I was on, and just kept on, no matter what I did, it just finally, it couldn't, it was constantly telling me to turn around, take rights, take lefts. It didn't, it couldn't quite, because they were right next to each other. And that was actually one case where I I tested Apple Maps and it worked fine.
Isn't it interesting?
Was that I-35?
The way that that map was.
Was it I-35?
I-35 upper and lower deck? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, we had this thing where I was outside Moscone looking for a restaurant, and as I got closer, the pin would move around, and there was like four or five of us looking at our phones using Google Maps, and we just thought they were having fun with people at WWDC, but the restaurant would actually move as you got closer to it.
That's funny. Yeah.
Isn't it weird that you really do have to have multiple map solutions on your device, right? No matter what device you have, where there are instances in which I trust Waze when I know where I'm going. I just want to know the best route and right. what the live traffic is going to be, because Waze's signature quirk is that if there is a way that it can save me 1/4 of a mile by adding 18 left and right turns to get me there, then it will definitely do that. Whereas the Google Maps and Apple Maps, they're really great for getting me someplace where I'm not really sure if I've been there before. But it's not. But even though both of them try to integrate traffic, they're really not good at figuring out that, tractor trailer just overturned and blocked off all three lanes of I-95. Maybe you want to not use I-95.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I'll often look up on three different devices and my car GPS just to see what the choices are.
And I will say that my go-to is always Google Maps at this point. Yeah. I mean, I don't really, I'm kind of waiting to hear news. Every once in a while I turn on Apple Maps, as I said, if something's really going wrong, but it's generally I just use, I mean, and for me, a lot of it's also being able to, the mass transit stuff in New York and everything else was kind of a deal breaker for me.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I think the consensus is it is getting better. But it's a hard thing to do, and nobody does it perfectly. And really, in some ways, it's a measure of how far we've come that we even expect these things to be so accurate.
Yeah, I would even go as far as to say that it's not only come a long way. I think it's right in the bandwidth of expectations for a map and a navigation device. It's not the greatest app on the market right now. But the way that it integrates so well with Siri, the way that it integrates with so much of the other iOS experience, and this is parenthetically, this is another thing that makes me wish that why is it that Apple is willing to allow a navigation app that it makes integrate well across the experience, but it doesn't make those sort of APIs, that sort of experience available to third-party apps? I mean, it has a lot of positives in and of itself, and I think it's now time we can stop saying the beleaguered mapping app application from
good.
It's now a perfectly decent app.
We will stop saying it now. Remove the word beleaguered.
Apple. I now proclaim your mapping app adequate. Hey, nonny.
So say we all.
You have been unbeleaguered. We've removed the beleaguering. let's take a break. We'll come back with your tips and picks of the week. How about that, gentlemen?
Yay!
Woo-hoo. But first, a word about backup. You better back up. You better not shout. And I don't want you coming crying to me if you don't. Right? What's on your hard drive? Just think about the kinds of things you might be losing if you don't back up. Financial records, tax time's coming. I bet you got a lot of stuff right there, maybe, right? Don't want to lose that. You have to start all over again. How about baby pictures, wedding pictures? You know, stuff that you have one copy of and it's on your hard drive. That's what you got to back up. You don't need to back up your apps or your operating system. You need to back up the stuff that you made that there's only one of that you can't afford to lose. Now, backing it up to a drive next to your computer is all well and good, but that's not really planning for disaster. Backing things up is about disaster planning. Planning for tsunami, fire, flood, thievery, to steal everything in the house, that kind of thing. For that, you need off-site backup. That's really the most important part. Well, I got a solution for you. Automatic, so you don't have to think about it. It just backs up whenever you're online continuously. So you make a change to something, it's automatically backed up right away. That's good. Off-site backup for your stuff. And here's the best part. Everything on your computer, just $59 a year. A year. Less than $5 a month for everything. I want you to try Carbonite.com. Use our offer code MacBreak. You can get 2 free weeks. You don't need a credit card. If you decide you like it, Mac or PC, once you use the offer code MacBreak for the trial, you'll automatically get 2 free months at Carbonite.com. It's secure. You don't have to worry. SSL, full encryption on the way up. You can further encrypt it with trust no one encryption. Only you know the password. I love this. It offers you access to those files anytime. Well, it doesn't if you do the encryption, trust no one encryption, because obviously you can only access it from the place where you encrypted it. But if you want to use it as a cloud storage, you can do that. And they have free iPhone apps, Android apps that let you access it or just log on to your Carbonite account from any computer. And your stuff's right there, and you can download it and use it. Really sweet. Try it free. Carbonite.com. Use our offer code MacBreak, and you'll get 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week this week.
Well, my pick of the week is as fresh as today's headlines. It is, of course, hang on, backing up. It is, of course, the Pope app.
There's an app for that.
The official Vatican newspaper, Salvatore Romano, creates this the Pope app, your go to source for all papal news and information. It includes a live stream to any live events that are being streamed from the Holy See. So if there's a mass going on, you will be able to see live cam of the mass in progress. I presume that when there's news about the new pope, that will be streamed live as well. In addition to the official calendar, official announcements from the papacy, I'll say a number of things about this. On the one hand, it's a very, very well designed app. It looks really, really cool. Here's a live cam. That you're seeing behind here right now.
Wow.
It's nicely designed. It's nicely designed, so you drill down and then drill up through whether you want news, whether you want video, whether you want alerts. And so it's kind of off-putting when one of the squarest institutions in the world actually has a better designed app than your tech startup has.
Wow.
But unfortunately that is the problem you're facing as a founder of a tech startup. And it is actually called the Pope app, as simple as that.
Wow.
Another app that's kind of similar, but it's more event oriented, is a new app that came out called Conclave.
Are you really an expert on this, Andy?
Well, I'm not even really joking about this. I love the way that all these mobile apps and all these mobile devices are changing the way that we're plugged into news events. I remember when I first started following the Iditarod at his event like 10 years ago, where it was almost like I had some secret information about which Alaska-based sites and which mushing sites actually had blogs that had interesting information on them. And now you can get like a news app that turns your phone pretty much into a television channel devoted entirely to this one news event, this one news item. So it's not as though I'm that interested in how the conclave is going. But you know what? If there's a simple app and that will give me just a quick look at here's everything that's going on you need to know at this moment. And you know, you take out your phone and you see that okay, no one sent me a text, and you refresh your Twitter page and okay, there's an interesting thing about Twitter, but there's no links I want to follow. Then let's see what's happened with the Pope right now. And then yeah, that's worth 18 seconds of your time. And they're both of these apps are free and they're cool and they'll be of no use to you a week from now probably. Or excuse me, after the I'm sorry, I'm sure you'd want to see the investiture of the new Pope, but after that maybe you want to put this in the back drawer of your iOS app store. But until then. Hey, free and it can't beat free.
That's pretty cool, I got to say. And it is such an interesting mix of medieval and modern.
Yeah. Oh, and someone on Twitter was kind enough to answer the question that I posed earlier on. I'm going to scroll up. It's Mario Santa Maria, appropriately enough, said that they delete about the Pontifex account. They delete every tweet from the account of Pontifex for the Sede Vacante until there is a new pope. So the fact that the account is still active, but because the pope has left, that means that his tweets are no longer available.
Wow.
So they have to delete them all. And then it will be the same account, but only the new pope can tweet to the new account.
But that's kind of like what you said. They break the seals and everything. It's fresh start.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. I would love to read a book on comparative religion that takes it from that perspective. I mean, Catholicism, for all of its many problems, one of the features is, well, look, you're plugging into something that is very steeped in tradition, and every time a new technology or a new twist of society comes along, they have to reinterpret something that they basically came up with seven centuries ago to figure out how this works in a new world. And it's cool to see how other religions sort of have to respond to that, but how they maintain that connection with the past without being encumbered by it. So I'm just glad to see there's nothing preventing you know the Pope from having a Twitter account. There's nothing preventing them from having iOS apps.
No, absolutely not. And I apologize for the Snoop Dogg in the background. Well, I was searching for Dropbox because they said there was a new Dropbox app out. And I unfortunately, you know, I did the search for Dropbox on my phone and I accidentally tapped drop it like it's hot. So that's why. Just so you know.
To the end, double OP. Nice.
And then I couldn't figure out how to stop it. So that's
you can't stop the Snoop. The Snoop is unstoppable.
Can't stop the Snoop.
B-R-O-P to the B-O-S-I-C.
That's why he had to be Snoop Lion now, not just the dog.
That's right. Alex Lindsay, what do you got for us?
So I have two apps that go together, and it may seem odd when I talk about which ones they are, but I use them a lot. So I get a lot of taxis, and I had a little trouble getting taxis in D.C. A couple weeks ago, and I ended up walking like 8 blocks with my laptop open. It was a big mess. And one of my friends was like, I can't believe you're not using Uber. Have you guys used Uber?
Love Uber.
Yeah. So Uber is the one app. And Uber, basically what you do is you put all your information into the app. And so your cell phone and – I mean, not your cell phone. Your
charge card.
Your charge card. So it's all built in there.
That's the main thing, yeah.
And then you say, I want a car. And you'll see little cars. It's not very popular in Austin. But in New York, it is incredibly popular. And in D.C., much to the chagrin of a lot of cab drivers. So you get up there and you see these little cars going around. And you just say, okay, I need to pick up. And so it'll be downstairs in 5 minutes. And then you get this nice black car shows up. You get in. It takes you out. It's a little bit more expensive. I think it's about 20% more. But there's a car there. Like, you're not sitting there for half an hour putting your hand out. You walk out of the office when it's ready. They'll ping you to tell you they're downstairs. You walk down, so it really feels like a car service. So it's more expensive than a cab, but less expensive than a typical car service.
And you get a picture of your driver, so you know when you go out the door what he looks like.
This is the last face you're going to see.
And he gets a picture of you. Yeah, right.
Right. And there's no exchange of money. You just say, thank you, and you get out of the car.
Yeah, they tip him and everything.
Yeah, so everything is all self-contained. So if you're looking for that pain-free way of traveling around a lot of these L.A. or New York or D.C. or
Paris has it. That's where I used it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's incredible. It just really really makes that experience. Because I've been in almost all of these cities in the rain trying to hail a cab. And, it's very hard to look back once you start using this.
If you can afford it. So you can afford it because they do also something called demand pricing. So, like on New Year's Eve, the price goes higher a lot.
Right.
I've seen people that are in areas where there's no cabs and they're worried about their security, and they can just pull out the Uber app and press a button, and a car will come to them.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. It really works, and I think it's really one of those things that it is a disruptor because it makes the relationship so much more efficient. You know, you're not calling somebody. You're not doing anything. It's like totally refined. Now, when you're in the car, assuming you're by yourself, otherwise it's kind of antisocial. But have you seen Figure by Propellerhead? Is it Propellerhead? Hold on.
No, that's the music company.
Yeah, Figure. So this is like, I don't know how much it is, but it's not very expensive. And it is incredibly cool. So basically what you can do is you can kind of set up a little, you can hear it. And you can start playing. And it's just, it really is now, here's what I think is interesting about this. This is really moving away from the,
Alex Lindsay does when he's in a cab.
That's what I do.
He makes music.
Play around with music. It's fun. It's anyway, so this is like, you know, this is really cool. This is the iMini. And this is really cool, and it's the whole thing. It really looks like you're working with a keyboard. And the problem with that is trying to make something that really and we've talked a lot about this, trying to make something that really looks like a physical thing work like the physical thing is very difficult, and it's very hard to hit these little keys. This is a cool app.
Especially on a mini.
But very hard to use on a mini. Where you're seeing, like, this is the next generation where we're not trying to we're no longer trying to look like a piano or a synthesizer. We are simply being a synthesizer. So it is, let's see here if I hit record. Anyway, I screwed it up somewhere, but you can change all your keys. You can change your BPM. You can add drums, add pieces. And I don't know what I'd use it for. I don't know if it's really productivity, but it is, a lot of fun. So, Figure is the app, and you really do end up with stuff that I like to listen to. I don't think I'm ever going to publish it, but it is definitely worth checking out if you like that kind of thing.
How much is that?
How much is it? I think you had it up there for a second.
Those tend to be expensive, those music apps.
I just bought it for 99 cents.
Oh, well worth it. I'm getting it on all my stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't very expensive.
Good. Cheap at 10 times the price.
Because Propeller Heads, they do Reason.
That's purchased for $10.
Yeah, could be expensive. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have two. The first one I'll just do quickly because it's incredibly self-serving. But we shipped the new version of the iMore app, iMore 2.0. The developers, Nickelfish, which was spearheaded by Seth Clifford and Tammy Curran, they rebuilt it from scratch, like Xcode new project. And it's got comments, it's got landscape mode, it's got videos, it's got everything in it. And it's the only way that I actually read my own site anymore, just how good I find it. So if you haven't seen it yet, it's brand new in the App Store. It went out on Thursday, and I'd love for you to try it.
How important do you think it is for a site like yours to have an app?
People keep asking this because it's actually a really big debate, and the reason we did it was twofold. One is kind of self-serving. One is kind of community-serving. The first one is that we offer more than just web stories. We try to do a lot of original content, and part of that is audio and video shows, kind of almost like what Twit does. I mean, not on the same scale, but we do a few of them.
Right.
And to be able to build that into the app is something that we can't do on mobile Safari. So you have a full web, full podcatcher in there that you can get all the audio and video shows. And it's got other features too, like you can favorite things. So if you're on an airplane or you're in a subway, the stories, your favorite stories are always in that tab, always downloaded and offline for you. And eventually we'll do push notifications and things like that. And it's a free app. We don't have any ads in it. It's just it's really meant as a service for our community. But on the flip side, the App Store is becoming more and more of a search engine. There are people who aren't familiar with the web or don't use the web or would never find iMore that way. And we want to make sure that, we want to skate to where our customers are going to be. We want to make sure that we don't rely on them happenstantially coming across us, but we're really everywhere on YouTube or social media or the App Store, and they can easily find us. And if we prove, you know, valuable or helpful to them, they can enjoy what we're doing.
And your second app?
It's version 2.0. So it's the second version of that app. The original version, it didn't have all the features that we wanted. We tried to polish it as much as we could, but we didn't have time to include everything. So this upgrade is where we actually really want it to be, and then we're going to build out from this going forward.
Oh, sorry.
My main pick, though, is the Mophie Juice Pack Air.
Yes,
Air
it is.
Juice Pack.
Finally.
So the helium is the light gray one. The air is the dark black one, and the air is so good. I actually am not sure why they made the helium. It's $20 more, but it is basically the same size, the same weight. It's got buttons instead of holes for the different.
It's more milliamp hours, though, isn't it?
It's 100% instead of 80%. It's $99 instead of $79.
Not
but
that big a difference.
Yeah, so I would almost forget that the helium exists and just completely go with the air. And I've been testing it. It has all the same features that you know and love from previous Mophies, including, you know, the charge indicator. It won't sync data, same as the helium. The lightning connector that they're using is for power only, so you can't sync to iTunes over an old-fashioned tether. But if you use iCloud or Wi-Fi sync, you're fine. I do wish that they would provide lightning pass-through because, you know, I plug into lightning in my car. I use that to connect to my audio system. I would prefer to have lightning on both ends, but I understand why they don't. But overall, if you have an iPhone 5 and you want to get through, whether it's a day at a conference or you're going away for an overnight trip and you don't want to bring a charger, this is the pack that I'm going to from now on.
Yeah, I think we're reviewing it on Before You Buy a little later on, actually. This is so fun, Alex.
it's addicting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and you just end up with something that is cool. Like you're sitting there like, and literally I can lose an hour.
I love Propeller Head. They're amazing.
Yeah, they do such great work. And I think that the move away from, I think this is going to, that is, to me, that app is this kind of step away from skeuomorphism that we've talked about in the past, where you're ending up with a clean application that is producing the result.
Right.
And we don't need to think about what it used to look like or what it used to be.
Right.
It's digitally authentic.
Digitally authentic.
I like that.
Native.
That's the trendy term for the opposite of skeuomorphism, like Metro and things like that.
Yep. Yeah.
So the reason I was looking up Dropbox, it's not a refined iOS app. It's a refined desktop app. In fact, if you haven't updated Dropbox, Dropbox 2.0 for your Mac desktop now has the new drop down, which will show you activity, show you recently changed, Very interesting change. So if you are a Dropbox user on the Macintosh, make sure you update to the latest client. It went live just minutes ago. And really interesting change in how it works. Thank you all for being here. Alex Lindsay is at the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com. If you have need of their services, and I'm sure you do, you should just go there and say, we need you. We need you, Alex Lindsay. Come here.
And someday we'll actually put stuff up there about what we do beyond the training.
It's secret.
Which is a majority, but mostly complex live streaming.
All
events.
I know is every once in a while there's like 100 people in our basement, and it looks like a scene out of NASA where they're all in front of
video ops.
There's also, there's stuff going on. It's like, whoa,
Alex, can you get a partnership with Uber so that anytime someone needs server addressing or video streaming, they can just simply, use their credit card, find out which Pixel Corps person is nearby?
There's always a Pixel Corps volunteer nearby.
Alex will Halo drop in.
Yeah.
Well, and people should definitely, join our G+ community and follow me on Twitter. We're going to be doing a heavy push to find people all over the world because our production keeps on getting more and more global, and we're looking for people interested in production all over the world. So definitely follow me on Twitter and join the G+ community on for Pixel Corps. And we're not doing with a lot of it right now, but we will be in the very near future.
Stay tuned. Do go to imore.com, or better yet, get the iOS app and keep up on all the latest Mac news, including the best rumors. These guys know it better than anyone. Renee Ritchie, are you editor-in-chief? What is your title?
Yes. That is. I think that's what they stenciled on my door.
Da boss. Renee Ritchie. It's so glad that we can have you on a regular basis here. It's really
Thank
nice.
Thank you, Leo. I love being here.
Glad you joined the team. Andy Anako at the Chicago Sun-Times, where he is always scribble, scribble, scribble. Reviewing great things, although you can go to techhive.com and read his part two up yet of your Why I Switched to Android?
Actually, all three parts up were up last week. There's going to be one follow-up that I'm writing today that's just like answers the questions. I'm doing a lot more stuff for Tech Hive now in addition to the Sun-Times stuff. Because
Tech Hive is an IDG website, Mac World, PC World. Jason Snell is the editor.
Exactly. Fantastic. Part of the there are a lot of reasons why I like writing for Tech Hive. One of them is that I've been working with Jason since I think 93, 94.
Yeah, he's the greatest. Yeah.
And so it's like you like the knowledge that I know him, he knows me, I know how I drive him crazy. He doesn't drive me crazy at all, but at least he knows there's not going to be any surprises that you're going to get an update about 30 minutes after I file my story because I suddenly decide, oh, that's the point. That's the dumbest thing I ever read in my life. Here's something else to put in.
News, reviews, and how-to. It's a very nice site. Jason's been talking about this for a while, and I'm glad it launched. Yeah. TechHive.com. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Because of the time changes now, that's 1800 UTC right here at twit.tv. I do love it if you watch live. We pay attention to the chat room, get lots of good ideas, basically all my material. But if you can't be here live to help write my jokes, you can always get an on-demand version after the fact, audio or video available at twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly or wherever, podcasts are aggregated, delivered, places like iTunes, the Zoom store, places like that. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work because break time is over.